Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
Let's. First, we got to go through our little ground rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the ex-Christian.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew.
I'm reading the New International Version of the Bible, NIV.
And I'm reading the NRSV, New Revised Standard Version of the Bible. Also, this is not a Bible study podcast.
Nor is it appropriate for children. And it sometimes contains upsetting content due to the grossness of the Bible and not due to us.
We're perfect. Sometimes due to us.
And we would never do anything bad.
Well, that's a good point.
Or problematic.
I like that.
And is there anything else we need to mention?
No.
Well, there's one thing.
Okay.
Which is that there's a third person in the studio
mm-hmm.
right now. So we have with us in the studio today, you know her from her website, The Toast. You know her from her New York Times best-selling book, Texts from Jane Eyre. You know her from her brilliant advice column, Dear Prudence. Mallory Ortberg, welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming.
Here.
I also feel like it's appropriate to mention, because this seems generally on theme, that I was recently talking to my producer on the Dear Prudence podcast about how prudence is one of the four classical virtues of antiquity,
mm-hmm.
Not to be mistaken with the three theological virtues that when combined
oppose
the seven deadly sins. And I was saying that I really think we should start rotating them. So like one week I'm Dear Prudence and the next week I'm Dear Temperance.
Oh my God.
Dear Fortitude or Dear Justice.
And then people would be like, Dear Tempe. But before we get to the book of Ecclesiastes, I want to ask Mallory, as we ask all of our guests, what's your religious background?
It's full. Let me tell you. There's plenty of it. I grew up, both of my parents are pastors.
Yes.
And I come from a long line of people who work in the church
or are
pastors.
You're what we called a PK.
I am what I call a PK.
Pastor's
people call
kid.
Me. Sure. Yes. Pastor's kid is a word for a child of a pastor. And I am that. And they're actually pretty great. You know, they were the good.
Your parents are pastor's kids in general?
I don't know a lot of pastors' kids, so I'm going to stick with what I do know, which is my parents,
great.
Which is to say they're like pretty great, pretty thoughtful, liberal people, not like,
right.
I'm making a fist mm-hmm. gesture
we all saw
for anyone at yeah. home.
There's no one at home.
I went to Azusa Pacific University, which is a Christian college in suburban Los Angeles.
From A to Z in the USA.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, okay. You say that every time Azusa Pacific comes up. Is mm-hmm. that really what it's named
yeah,
after?
That's like the city's original slogan was like A to Z USA. Okay.
That's not like a back formation because like Pedro Azusa founded it or something?
No, there was no like Jim Azusa.
Okay.
It was like a goofy kind of portmanteau. When they were trying to like encourage everyone to move out west, they were coming up with all kinds of gimmicky names.
Sure.
And it was at that school that I was just like, ugh, this is the worst. I shouldn't have come here, but I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm just going to be like that jerk atheist in the back of the class who's like, "Moo," and like not happy.
God,
which
yeah,
is like the
right.
worst choice to make, right? Like,
yeah,
like rather yeah. than just like transferring or being like,
I'm going to find a way to.
Or just like kind of like being thoughtful about it and
sure.
trying to like understand like what's of value to other people and what do I not need to do. Just being like, "Meh." So I did that for a couple of years and like
I mean we all said it's shit in college
mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. I definitely had a Richard Dawkins phase.
That's so exciting.
It was brief. Yeah, I would like to point out that it was brief, but like I
that's
was
a phase where you dressed as Richard Dawkins.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes. I cosplayed as Richard Dawkins.
It's where you tried
basis.
To smuggle honey on planes.
My old business partner Nicole Cliff talks about she used to be I think not just vegetarian but vegan. And she talks about how, like, you know how everyone who used to be vegan will say, like, don't worry, I wasn't that asshole vegan. Well, I was that asshole. And it's like, I was that asshole. And, like, luckily it was reasonably short-lived. But then I sort of, like, developed a sort of more, like, nuanced outlook upon life. And in my late 20s, ended up getting into recovery, which like 12-step programs sometimes have a religious component, sometimes have a spiritual component, sometimes have a like as
right.
long as your higher power is
right.
like
they
the ocean that's
refer to
cool
a
too.
Higher power that you can kind of
totally
choose what that means,
which yeah. I actually really really appreciate. So I obviously don't want to talk about that too much on the show, but did get to a point in my life where I was sort of like, oh, I like could sure use some help organizing my life, and have actually like weirdly found some of the like wrote prayers in some like recovery stuff like really helpful, and just like the ways that like I could think about a higher power, God, spirituality,
just like yeah, the universe,
in a way that was really helpful. And it was like, hey, you're not looking to something to explain why things happen. You have kind of learned that like when you try to do this thing, you can't. And you're trying to tap into a resource that like enables you to like realign your will with sanity, like in a good way that's like enables you to like live a productive and like not miserable life. And that's been like kind of remarkable. So sort of a full circle of feeling like, oh, I don't know most stuff, but this is helpful to me, and I sure like it. And that's a sort of vague summation of my whole deal.
That was a great whole deal.
Thank you.
It was not a half deal.
I've had a lot of different relationships to the Book of Ecclesiastes, so it's kind of fun to be here.
I'm really excited to get into it, because when I asked you, I invited you on the podcast, and I asked you if you had a preference for what book you wanted to do, and you immediately said Ecclesiastes. So I'm excited to get into it and see why that is.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
So I'm just going to give some fast facts about the Book of Ecclesiastes.
Do you want to play the fast facts theme?
Yeah.
It's the facts of life theme sped up, as we've discussed before.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
We don't really do that, but we should.
This time
you
I
take
will.
The good, you take the bad, you take them all, and then you have the facts of life, the facts of life.
We don't even need to now. Mallory did it for us.
And then Mrs. Garrett says something like, girls. I'll stop talking about the facts of life now. I need a minute.
All right. While you cool off, I will explain that Ecclesiastes is sometimes ascribed to Solomon.
I could see that. I mean, I could see that based on what the text of the thing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the text, like, is first person from the perspective of, like, someone who says that he was king in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's probably patently untrue, like, like most of the so attributions.
So it's actually done in a style of ancient Near Eastern fictional autobiographies, which was a subgenre of wisdom literature.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you're here to impart this knowledge.
Of course, yeah. So actually, it would be really common to write like a philosophical treatise or a series of proverbs where you're kind of trying to figure out what's the best way to live life?
Mm-hmm.
How do you find order? What's your place in the social structure? How do you relate to the gods or to God? What's the best way to live? And you would attribute it to a thinker or a figure who had either some attribute that you were going to explore or whose life you felt like exemplified the moral you were trying to impart. So this is actually like a stylistic trope. Like, like in the same way that like Hurt Comfort is a subset of fan fiction.
Sure.
This is a subset of wisdom literature.
Got it. Oh,
sorry
so
for
exciting.
Comparing this to slash literature.
Do you know?
You apologize to us. We didn't write it, as we've established.
You're right.
Do you know the original Hebrew name
for this book?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Kohelet?
It is Kohelet. Yeah.
You said it really cool.
I speak a little Hebrew. I don't know if you know this about
me. She brags about it every week.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I get to brag about it every week.
I
on
speak
the podcast.
Non-Hebrew.
Non-Hebrew.
So, non-Hebrew.
And that apparently apparently means teacher.
Yeah.
That's not like the standard word for teacher, though.
Yeah. It's like teacher, prophet, speaker.
I guess it literally means gatherer is what I
read.
That's
dope. Right. Like the gatherer. That's very like
and apparently, apparently Ecclesiastes is based on the Latin transliteration of the Greek translation of this person's Hebrew name.
Exactly.
Probably written around 300 BC in a Hellenistic context. But it would not have been at all uncommon to be like, here's a famous historical figure. I am writing from their perspective. And people would understand like that that's what you were doing. They wouldn't be like, ah, a book from
you
Solomon.
You said it was Solomon. Yeah. It's not actually Solomon.
Yeah, yeah.
Got
like,
it.
Gotcha.
I know
Got
I'm running
it.
Up against the edge of the etymology corner here, but you know how they know it's post-exilic? That is, that it's written by people that have experience with Babylon and stuff?
Uh-huh.
It's because there are Persian loan words in it.
Oh, interesting.
When he talks about parks, that word in ancient Hebrew is a Persian loan word.
Huh. That's
get
so
on
exciting.
That. So put you, that in your etymology.
You
corner.
Know ancient Hebrew. You apparently know ancient
no, I know,
Persian.
I know modern Hebrew is the
sure.
thing.
I know how to read the intro to the book. That's what I know.
That's what it was. All right.
See, okay. my book is an NIV study Bible. Mm-hmm. Mallory is holding it right now. Mm-hmm. And so it has a lot of notes that are all about like making the text be literally true, mm-hmm. you know? So mine is like, yeah, it could have been Solomon if you think about it.
Yeah. Boy, if that's your angle, reading the Bible, you're pizzaing when you should have French fried it. You remember that episode of South Park?
When I remember people quoting it.
Yeah. Like the guy's teaching them how to ski and it's about the shape your feet make with the skis and how to stop and how to go. And he keeps saying, if you pizza when you want a French fry, you're not going to have a good time.
Okay. So let's just get into Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
Since we're already...
Did we miss any fast facts?
No.
I know I interrupted you.
No. In fact, you added way more fast facts than I had.
The record for the slowest fast facts of all time.
Sorry.
And yet,
and
by far the most educational.
lest we forget, Abraham Lincoln quoted Ecclesiastes in his 1862 address to Congress.
Oh, yeah. You were just looking that up.
He was talking about generations. Ecclesiastes 1:4, generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. And then he said more stuff that sounded really cool that I had forgotten.
Great.
But just so you know, write it down, everyone.
Yeah. It'll be on the test.
1862.
Ecclesiastes 1:4.
Yeah.
Lincoln.
Abraham. Okay. We'll do like a little summary here. So we'll just kind of go through it chapter by chapter briefly. Chapter one, we start with, in the NIV, it says meaningless. Everything is meaningless.
Really?
Yeah.
What is yours?
Vanity.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't want to get too much into like, well, the original word is, but the original word that like gets used a ton in Ecclesiastes is H-E-B-E-L or H-E-V-E-L.
Oh, I don't know that word.
It can be translated a lot of different ways. I think the most that I remember is like a breath, a mist, a vapor, something that is fleeting, something that does not stay. So again, like this is where translation is as much an art as it is a science.
Yeah,
where you have to think of like, what meaning are they? Because like you get a really different experience if you read this and it says everything's meaningless versus something that says everything's fleeting.
Mm. Or vanity.
Yeah, or vanity. Like those are really, that's what I kind of like about reading different interpretations is like, if you're in a really dark place, like go ahead and read this with the meaningless translation. Like that shit's.
Yeah, dude, I was like,
your Bible up.
I was like, this is the most emo thing I've ever read.
And I love that. Like, I love that it's like thrown in the Bible with the rest of the wisdom literature. Cause it's like, it feels like a book that has not seen the rest of the Bible.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So yeah, then we get like, there's nothing new under the sun. Basically, most of the book is just going to be variations on like the idea that everything is meaningless. Like good stuff is meaningless, bad stuff is meaningless.
He lays out the problem in the first chapter. Yeah. Life is boring and nothing is new. Or not life is boring necessarily, but nothing is new.
Are you reading the Voice translation?
No, I'm reading my notes.
Oh, okay, good. I was like, that sounds like some shit the Voice would try to write.
Nico actually wrote the Voice translation. Fun fact.
I'm also a judge on The Voice.
Congratulations, baby.
That's amazing.
In speaking of enjoying things, chapter two, pleasures are meaningless. I have a list of them, the pleasures that he specifically lists as meaningless.
Okay.
Houses, vineyards, gardens, parks with fruit trees, reservoirs, male and female slaves and other slaves. Already breaking free of the gender binary. This is 300 BC.
They were into eunuchs back then, right?
Herds/flocks. More than anyone else has ever had. Silver, gold, treasure, men and women singers, and a harem. Mm-hmm.
These are the things he's describing in the first person mode here. Of these are the things he's tried.
Yes,
right. Mm-hmm.
And if we say that it's Solomon, you know, fictionally or non fictionally, sure. Who knows? Who can say? We know that he had like a million horses and also like 1,000 wives. Mm-hmm. So he really did try it all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like sort of laying out like, listen, guys, like, here's why you should listen to me. I've done everything. Like, pick something that you think will make you happy. I gave it a try. So like, you should definitely listen to me. I'm not just some idiot.
Yeah. Then we get like wisdom and folly are meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Both, you know, like it being wise and being a fool, both meaningless. Mm-hmm. Toil is meaningless. I wrote down... I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I like that his deep existential despair takes the form of like a kid going, but I don't want to share. I want to keep my stuff. Chapter three, we get there's time for everything.
Mm-hmm.
The birds.
A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot. Now, I want to share something with both of you that mm-hmm. neither of you know about me, which is that in high school, remember AOL Instant Messenger?
I sure do.
My AIM profile was, for a long time, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance.
That's deep.
I grew up dancing competitively. So it was actually...
So it was both deep and shallow.
It was like not deep at all. It was like... it was like
it's time to dance, bitches! The Bible says so!
Also, I googled Bible phrases about dancing and here's what I got.
That's like basically, yeah.
Except Google wasn't around.
You should have gone with the one where King David dances before mm-hmm. his wife in the ephod.
And she was ashamed?
And she was ashamed.
Yeah.
And then
Which
she...
Which is basically the premise of Magic Mike.
And then she never had kids. She was cursed to be infertile.
It's amazing.
But I also want you both to know that this Bible verse in my AIM profile was in pink Comic Sans.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was into.
There were only two acceptable options. One was pink Comic Sans. The other is every other letter capitalized.
I didn't have every other letter capitalized. That is something I never did.
I also want to point out that this has one of the best verses, which is God hath laid eternity in the hearts of men.
Yes.
That's just, again, awesome.
Yes.
And talking there about this, the irony of the fact that God created time, he foreordained all of this. But he also gave humans the ability to comprehend that there was a past, a present, and a future, mm-hmm. as if there was some separation between them. Like, even though in God's mind it has already happened, and that the irony is that we don't understand that.
However,
we don't have the tools to understand that.
Despite that, we learn that man's fate is like that of the animals. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the spirit of man goes upward and if the spirit of animal goes down into the earth.
I noted that too.
Now, we saw in Psalms a Bible verse that has been used as justification for being anti-abortion. Mm-hmm. I want to know why I've never seen anyone use this Bible verse as justification for the idea of dog heaven.
The rainbow bridge is real.
Like, it's in the Bible, okay? Ecclesiastes 3, like, 20 or something.
Make it happen. Spread the word.
I'm gonna.
Biblical foundation for dog heaven.
This is gonna be my ministry.
Dog heaven would be amazing.
Well, PETA could use it, too.
Yeah. I don't want PETA to use
like
it.
Like the devil can cite scripture.
This
for
is what I was gonna say.
Shit. Yes. Oh, shit.
I didn't want to actually say that. Thank you.
There. But... No, they're the worst. Like, I think everyone knows PETA's the worst, right? Like, they're not.
Yeah.
That's like a perfect example of like, you can start out kind of being right and turn it into being wrong.
Yeah. Turn it into being the wrongest.
Right?
I prefer Lavash anyways. I'm just trying
You're so lucky my tea is gone because I'm throwing your face right now.
Hey, this is a no politics podcast.
Let's see. Chapter 4. I wrote down, I declared that the dead are happier than the living, but better than both is he who has not yet mm-hmm. been.
That is the best. That's one of the best lines in the book, I think.
And one of the most emo lines.
Very much so.
Ever written. Mm-hmm.
But it has a sense of humor about it, too.
Well, and that's what, like, part of why this book has, in my, like, various incarnations of, like, the Bible's great, and the Bible's the worst, and the Bible's many things.
Mm-hmm. That's like the point of this podcast is to figure it out. Yeah.
It's like, I feel like there's a lot of like humor in this book. Mm-hmm. There's lots of comfort with contradiction. Like mm-hmm. in one sentence, he'll say like, nothing matters. And then in another, he'll say like, no, but like, it's better to be wise than to be a fool. And then later he's like, it's no different. And it feels very much like depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like not just like, I mean, also the kind of like global questions everyone struggles with, but also this real sense of like, why do I do anything? And like kind of alternating between like, I'm furious with everything to I can't feel anything to I have all these things and they don't mean anything to me to, well, at least I have these consolations to no, these consolations don't mean anything. And kind of like ping ponging back and forth.
Totally.
In this really wonderful way that I really appreciate. And I'm so glad they put this in here because I feel like there's so many people who could like grow up in a kind of oppressive religious environment and see this book and be like, oh, thank God. Like somebody else has had some thoughts, you know, like, oh, yes. Stuff's not great.
I've talked about it before, but there are some books in the Old Testament that don't feel like they are on a human scale. Mm-hmm. You know, they're about kings or about the great movements of the world or God or whatever. And there are some books that are on a human scale
yeah.
that are about psychology or about belief or like thought on an individual level. And this is definitely the most human, I think, mm-hmm. of the books we've read so far.
In yeah, that even though it's supposed to be written by a king, it feels like it could be anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 5.
Before we get to chapter 5, can I say that?
Yeah, please.
All toil and all skill in work come from one person's envy of another. Did you know that?
Ooh, that's good. That's kind of true.
It's kind of true and also deeply cynical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, it's that kind of like the weird warped truth of depression, which like when you're deep in depression or anxiety, you can feel like at last everything's been stripped away and I see the world for the way it really is. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's kind of true. It gives mm-hmm. you a specific kind of insight. And in some ways, it is itself like
the biggest illusion.
Yes, yeah. yes, yes. And it makes you think there's no good faith anywhere. Everything is, you know,
based on jealousy.
Yeah, motivated yeah. by selfishness and jealousy. And like there is a truth to that because there's so much awfulness in the world that like this really like opens its arms wide to receive the awfulness. But it stops there.
But this book does a pretty good job of trying to process that too.
Totally.
By what you said, embracing contradiction.
Yeah.
Because it will state this thing and then it will say, you know, toil and labor is like God's only gift to humanity because that's mm-hmm. where we can find real meaning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even though it's meaningless.
Even though it's meaningless.
But like at the same time.
We don't have there's no other option.
Yeah.
Like unless we all want to jump off the planet at the same time.
Can we do that?
I don't know.
We got to figure out
flat
a way
Earth,
to do
man.
That.
Flat Earth. No, but I think that's one of the things, again, that's really wonderful about this book is I think it takes really seriously the kind of like idea that, well, life is short, so you should do these things. And sometimes people say that in a way that sort of glosses over like that meaning, like life is short.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So people... all these things kind of don't matter. And that's awful and scary and also freeing and also the worst. And this kind of idea that he sometimes bumps into, which is it's sort of like the cosmology of this book kind of reminds me of Job, where there's like the stage where people act out their bits and then the wings where like God and the Satan and the angels are kind of like working and you sort of need to see both to see the full story.
Hmm.
And this one keeps talking about under the sun.
It's interesting.
Yes, that's a refrain. Like mm-hmm. it uses the phrase under the sun.
Yeah. And just this sort of idea
times.
Underneath, without access to God or the gods, without access to eternity, just knowing that it might be there, but not knowing.
There's stuff above the sun, but
like
we don't know about it.
If I don't like if I didn't have sort of some sort of hope in a god, all the things that I try to fill up my day with and convince myself like this is going to make me safe, this is going to make me okay. It's just like no, it's not. I am not okay. Like which I love,
right. Chapter 5, I wrote down, do not be quick with your mouth, do not be hasty in your heart. Very excited to learn that the teacher, HaKohelet, is an ent.
There's also a Jenny Holzer quote in here.
Is there?
Which is, you know, abuse of power comes as no surprise. And he says, if you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things.
Nice.
Yeah, Jenny Holzer's in this book, man.
Except abuse of power comes as no surprise is in iambic pentameter.
Good.
The lover of money will not be satisfied with money.
Yeah, mine says, whoever loves money never has money enough.
Hmm.
Which is, like, so true. It's actually
absolutely true.
Because, like, when you think about, like, the Koch brothers or whoever, that, like, they have more money than nearly anyone in the history of the planet.
They do not seem deeply contented.
Can imagine. And yet they will, like, interfere with democracy in order to get more.
Yeah.
You know, like, in terms of what they need, they already have a jillion times more than anyone could ever need.
Can we play that quote from Chinatown later?
You mean, don't worry about it, Jake. It's just Chinatown.
You have not seen the movie Chinatown.
That was really not close at all. But,
no, especially the tone of voice.
I know. Don't worry about it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yeah, everything's going to be okay. There's this great scene where Jack Nicholson confronts John Huston's character, who's just this monstrous man who's kind of manipulating everything from behind the scenes. And Jack Nicholson says, you know, what I don't understand is, you know, you've already got everything. How many more houses can you buy? How much nicer could you possibly eat? Like, what don't you have that you have already. And he, I don't know if you've seen John Huston in much, but he's just got these shark eyes. Mm-hmm. And he just looks at him with this real intense stare and he says, "The future, Mr. Gids." And it's especially horrible because you realize in the movie he has raped his own daughter and he's trying to get access to her daughter by him. Like literally trying to continue warping the future according to his will. There's not a better movie about money and power corrupting and how corruption just begets more corruption and wants to continue itself. Also, I'm sorry for spoiling Chinatown, mm-hmm. but it's been 40 years.
Like, I think people will live, including me. Do you think it's maybe time for a break?
Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a little break, listen to some music, and we'll see you in a sec.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we have in the studio with us Mallory Ortberg.
That's true. I affirm it.
Mallory affirms it. We're talking about the Book of Ecclesiastes, and we're about halfway through it.
And we're enjoying the hell out of it, honestly.
Yeah, we are. We definitely are.
Not to jump the gun, but...
Spoiler alert.
Are we still
we love it.
Chapter 5?
Yeah, we're on chapter 5, 6.
We're on whatever chapter you want to be.
There's a verse in there that I think is a neat little callback. To Psalm 23.
Please tell
us. Lay it
us.
On us.
So I was actually talking about this with my dad this morning because I was like, I'm going to go be on a podcast about Ecclesiastes. And he was like, oh, and immediately said eight really smart things about Ecclesiastes.
Because that's his job. That's literally his job. Yeah.
But he was saying, there's this great moment in the 23rd Psalm. He prepareth me a table before mine enemies. And the sort of interpretation that he really liked, because I always thought of it as being like, yeah, I'm eating in front of my enemies. Suck it. God's here. I always thought that was a little shirty. Like, all right. Like, God seems kind of petty in this situation, but sure. But talking about another way of looking at it is like, it's hard to be in the presence of your enemies and not be incredibly anxious for your own safety. And the idea of feeling relaxed and safe and protected enough to be able to sit down and eat a meal. And then kind of the flip of that is Ecclesiastes 5:17, which is all his days he eats in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. And the sort of full, like, wonderful twin images of, like, somebody who's surrounded by danger, but, like, sitting down and, like, eating some bread. And then somebody else just, like, gnawing on a loaf of something, like, in the dark, just like, oh, I'm very upset. And those are just sort of, like, opposites of each other.
I think chapter 5 also has kind of some callbacks to a bunch of proverbs. There was a proverb, I forget the exact chapter and verse, but about like, don't make me rich, don't make me poor, just give me my daily bread. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like, I mean, obviously, I don't think I have read this book, and I have seen that it is a refrain throughout Ecclesiastes. Mm-hmm. And in chapter 5, like, it's good to eat and drink and take satisfaction in your work. But like, if you're any richer than that, you're just going to be unhappy.
Yeah. No, and it's sort of, I think one of the things that surprises a lot of people if they like really read the Old Testament, because it definitely has a reputation for like some nutty sexual ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's, there's definitely that stuff in there.
Yes.
But like the constant refrain is just that like wealth will eat you alive from the inside
yes.
out as an individual, as a community, and as a nation.
That like kind of starts in... Well, where do you think it starts? Do you have an opinion about that?
Certainly the Book of Kings, there's mm-hmm. kind of the first, and it's not quite the same as wealth, but the first sort of anti-monarchical sentiment possibly in Western civilization of just like, don't have a king, man. They're going to take your things and they're going to enrich themselves and they're not going to look out for you.
Yeah,
But then the people demand a king.
People fought
they're like,
God
no.
Yeah. Asked for a king.
Which, as we all know, is reflective in our current times where we appear to be asking for something that is not good for us. But yeah, the Bible does not like money.
Right.
It's not like don't ever have it, but it's like be really careful. And so it's kind of fascinating that like American Christianity is so like capitalistic.
But at the same time, the righteous are rewarded with wealth. I mean, Joseph is rich and powerful in Egypt. Mm-hmm. Every time they move to a new place, they are the best shepherds in the new place, and they get all the nicest land.
But you can see how even then, like it's sort of like mirrored later in the book of Esther, like his wealth never stops with him. Like when he gets that position, he uses it to try to help everyone from the famine, and mm-hmm. he uses it to try to help the poor. And it's the same with Esther, where she becomes queen and she's terrified that she's going to have to admit that she's Jewish to stop Haman
and risk her own life. Yeah.
Has that great line of just, you know, for deliverance may come from another quarter.
Yeah.
And if it does not come from you, like the Jewish nation will survive. But it may be that you came to this prominence for such a time as this. And again, that kind of idea of... Yeah, like it's not.
If you've got it, you have to risk it.
Yeah, you have to use it. It belongs to the community. There's mm-hmm. the idea of the Jubilee, like gleaning Boaz in the fields. Like you have to. Your money is an obligation. It's never just cool. You've got money. Awesome.
That's a really great way to phrase it.
Yeah,
you're like bringing up all the stuff that we've discussed all of this stuff in previous episodes, and I don't think we've ever like coalesced it all into mm-hmm. the sentence, like, your money is an obligation to the community.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the really...
I mean, we've said your body is a wonderland. But
that was on our John Mayer podcast.
I wish you guys had that so much. And that's one of the things I really like, especially about, like, Jewish conceptions of justice and righteousness that have not always translated to Christianity. Like, we sort of dropped that when we stole some stuff from
Yeah.
Christ. Which is like, you don't get Christian,
oh
like,
God,
sorry, that. Christians, like white American Christians. When we took that stuff, we were sort of like, thank you, except we did not say thank you.
No, we said, fuck you.
But yeah, just this idea of like, doing good is not like, you don't get a pat on the head and a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to the people who have less.
So I actually, on this note, I'm going to jump ahead really quickly just because like, there's not a plot, so it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Jump ahead. We can go back. But in chapter 11, there's this verse, give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really good example of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the notes in my Bible,
mm-hmm.
it says, well, you're holding it, so you might be able to see them. It says that this means like, invest in 7 to 8 ventures.
No. That's stupid.
I'm going to read
you the
exact...
That's the worst interpretation
I've
ever heard.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
That is, diversify your efforts because you never know which ventures may fail. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Diversify your undertakings and reduce the risks.
Diversify, young man.
I know.
Go west,
I mean, that's okay,
that's
thank you, capitalist
get,
Bible. Like,
that's how we
if
get,
I wanted
like,
stock advice, I would ask my dad. I would not go to the Book of Ecclesiastes.
No, and like... Only someone who deeply wanted to preserve like a certain financial system could read this thing of
right.
like mm-hmm. help other people. Disasters will come. You don't get to have everything on your own and be like, that's right. I should like
my portfolio isn't diverse enough.
Yeah, I should invest in securities.
Yeah,
I should like, do what Wu-Tang Financial said and diversify my bonds.
Yeah,
yeah, it's those people are misreading some stuff.
Okay, going back to. I don't have anything for chapter 6. Do y'all have anything for chapter 6?
When he's talking about it's better to never be born than live a long life and not enjoy it. Mm. And he says, do not all go to one place. The reason I wanted to point that out was it's a very stark contrast with my somewhat limited understanding of like ideas about the afterlife mm-hmm. or whatever. It's like, yeah, everybody dies and then it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This is like Sheol style afterlife
mm-hmm.
where it's just like you go into the pit.
And also, your dog goes with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, your dog goes with you. Sometimes.
Well, maybe. We don't know.
But I don't know. I just like that because it's like, it seems to be a direct refutal. Or refutal, is that a word?
I think you were going with rebuttal and refutation.
Refutation, thank you.
Dang.
Of the idea that you're going to be rewarded when you die. I mean, mm-hmm. and that really sums up some of his opinions about how you should do your life stuff, as
yeah.
they say.
Yeah. Do your life stuff.
Mm-hmm. Also in this book, it says, better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire.
What does that mean?
Cool.
Stick with what you got. Don't think that there's...
diversify your portfolio. Play it safe.
Invest it all
mutual funds,
self-driving cars.
Yeah, let's all just agree to invest in some low-fee index funds. Can we just do that?
No, but I just think, yeah, I love what you said, and I love that that's, again, in the Bible.
Like, it's right there.
I love that this book is kind of trying to explore, what if there's God but no afterlife?
Mm-hmm.
What if there's goodness but no hope? And obviously there are other parts of the Bible that kind of explore some other ideas, but I like the idea that you have to, whatever your worldview is, whatever your eschatology is, at some point stop and acknowledge, like, at least the possibility that you will die and cease to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of ask, like, what now, motherfucker? Like, and you have to answer that in your own life at some point. Like, just like, what if? And I've definitely gone through periods where I have been really comfortable with a belief or a non-belief. And I've also gone through periods where I've been really anxious,
mm-hmm,
and just been sort of panicked and terrified at all hours of the day. And there's something weirdly comforting and bleak and confusing about this book that's sort of like, guys, I have no idea what, mm-hmm, happens after we die. I think, mm-hmm, probably nothing. I still think there might be God, but that doesn't give me any personal hope for myself. And like, for no view in my own reward, I still think we should do what's right. And I still think we should try to give what we have. And I still think we should try to like cling to God. But I don't have much more to offer you than that.
And I think in its embrace of contradiction, this book doesn't offer very many like super discrete answers about, mm-hmm, what it is, but it asks some excellent questions about what you should be thinking and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I satisfied? You know, like, if this is the end, like you said, if there is no afterlife or whatever, am I going to get to the end? And will it be better that I lived than had I never been born?
Mm-hmm.
Because have I seen evil, but have I embraced my toil? Have I enjoyed the moments that I've been given? I mean, those are good questions, I think.
Yeah.
High quality.
And I think that there's ways that it is also consistent with the eschatology of parts of the Gospels. There's other parts of the New Testament that, you know, fly a little further away from this.
Nico doesn't know shit about the New Testament.
That's true.
Well, I know you guys haven't gotten to that yet, so I won't get too deeply into it.
I read it, obviously, growing up. Like, not...
Yeah, no spoilers, though.
Not so, page to page.
Jesus actually talks more about hell than any other character in the entire Bible.
Mm.
He talks about it constantly. And it's very much in this real and present sense. Like, he uses expressions about, like... garbage heaps and places where like criminals' bodies were dumped outside the city that he was in. So it was very much this like real intense discussion of like what it's like to lose your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of conversation of like, and when you die, you will do this thing. Like he definitely like, you can tie that into his eschatology, but like it's very real, it's very present, it's very physical. And whenever he talks about the kingdom of heaven, it's never separated from life on earth, which is like very Jewish of him, right? It's like, how can you experience God's reality right now?
Mm-hmm.
So like, again, if you're reading this even from like a Christian perspective, but not trying to be the kind of person who's like, diversify your stocks, like I think like that is ethically consistent, because it's this idea of not, now Jesus has come and you all get to go to heaven, so everyone relax. It's this very real serious moral question, which is like, you know, given that we've kind of thought about death this way, would you even be able to bear eternity if it were offered to you? Like, if you were the type of person who hoarded what he had,
mm-hmm,
who didn't help others,
mm-hmm,
like, what good would eternity do you?
Mm.
If you're making these choices, like, what would it be other than a torment? Like,
that's a super interesting question.
And that's why, like, Jesus is always saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Not like, it's coming, brothers and sisters, someday. It's like, literally, it's right fucking here. And it's not like, yeah. So I think it often gets lost in conversation. But yeah, I feel like there's this very kind of consistent, like, death is coming. We're all going to the same place. You have an opportunity to live life in this really expansive, meaningful, special way. And if you don't take that opportunity, you could live for fucking ever. And you would,
and
not,
it would not
know peace, and you would not,
yeah,
be at peace. And you'd be like the Koch brothers. Like, you would live, yeah, like that. That's bad. Don't be the Koch brothers.
Don't be the Koch brothers.
Is the moral of this book.
I hear they rich, though.
on a completely different note, in chapter 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, so we're talking about all this super interesting philosophical stuff. And then in chapter 7, we just like We got to take a detour to hate women real quick.
Oh, yeah. Classic stuff.
I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chains.
She sounds bad.
I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all.
Oh, shit. He's been hurt. Like, you know. Especially you, Diane.
It's like, you're devoting this entire book of the Bible to how life is meaningless and death comes for us all. Mm-hmm. But like,
by the way, it's a little worse for women.
Yeah. By the way, women are sluts. Like, yeah. Just yeah. We're talking about like the highest conceptual like levels of morality mm-hmm. and like holiness. But P.S. women are sluts,
which is just kind of like, again, not to detract from like the glory of this book, which I really. But I like also feel like, what if he just wrote this right after he got dumped? Like, this was all sparked by just like, she said she was gonna love me forever. You know what?
Life is meaningless. Everything
most
is
men
meaningless.
Are bad, but women are worse.
My other question is, how hard did you try, bro?
Yeah.
Like, you found 1,000 dudes. I believe you talked to 1,000 dudes about wisdom and shit. How many ladies you talked to?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I talked to
1,000 women.
You really did 1,000? I don't. Your science is questionable.
You don't know 1,000 women.
I talked to my mom. She didn't seem that smart. Whatever.
Also in chapter 7, something that really resonated with me. It says, do not say, why are the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this.
Yes, I wrote that down too. Do not say, why were the old days better than this?
That's great advice for all of us.
I agree, because like that's become one of my standard go-to rule this opinion out immediately things. Like, oh, back in the day, things were so much better because A, B, and C. It's like, no. That's not, first of all, that's not a way to look at the world. Unless you're talking about something very specific that you have excellent information about.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure.
If you're just like, when I was a kid, I remember X and we don't have that anymore. Ergo, the world is worse. It's like, no, that's
especially
not.
Because I remember X is usually extremely vague. It's like, I remember like stuff was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
people
not like
people were
we
nicer
had stronger unions or like there was a lower level of income inequality between rich and poor. It's just like when I was a kid, like it was fine.
Yeah, you were a kid. You didn't have a job. Your parents were taking care of you. Like what you mean is I preferred childhood to adulthood. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is not the same thing as the world was better.
Right.
So and I'm glad to see that me and Ecclesiast here have wound up at the same conclusion, which is that like nostalgia, she not so good.
Also like, it's always, I really like these parts of the Bible where you see something that like, you didn't realize has been around literally forever. You know, like, oh, the old days were better. That's such a universal thing. But you don't think, oh, yeah, they already thought that in 300 BC.
And we talked a little bit about this in Enoch, but it's kind of like everybody to maintain like consonance of thought to avoid cognitive dissonance has to come to some of the same conclusions. Like, you know, this generation is going to ruin the world because I'm going to die. You know, like, right. And everybody is going to die. And so you all have to deal with that fact. And so you have to come to certain conclusions, which are just repeated forever for the entirety of human history since we learned how to speak.
And it's like here it is from 300 BC. People are already like saying it, you know? It's like our old days. Now, when we say the old days, we mean like 50 years ago, but like they mean over 2000 years ago. And it's still the same sentiment.
Yep. Sorry, everyone. It doesn't get better.
I don't
taking
have any...
on Dan Savage like that? Come on.
Chapter 9 starts with this example of wisdom greatly impressed me. That's not me speaking. That's the author speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And the example that he gives is there was a small city with only a few people in it. And, like, this powerful king sent a huge army to attack, but there was a poor but wise man in the city who saved everyone. But it doesn't say how he saved
them.
What
chapter are we in?
Chapter 9. It's chapter 9, verse 13.
Oh, okay. I thought I was looking in the beginning. Sorry.
That's what I thought it was. I just didn't write down the verse. I only wrote down the chapter.
Oh, yeah. The race is not to the swift, battle is... Yeah, this is also, like, a murderer's row of just, like, quotables.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
Totally.
Nothing under the sun. Race is not always the swift. Like a bunch of other stuff is
totally.
In here.
Potable quotables. That's our drunk quiz podcast.
Oh man, we should fucking start that podcast.
Yeah, sure. Wisdom's better than strength. That seems plausible. I also like that he's like, he saved the city by his wisdom. Do not ask me to get more
specific.
It doesn't
say anything else. Doesn't give any more details. Remember. It's like, here's a great example of wisdom. This guy was wise.
It's always so great, like, to read something from a totally different time and realize, like, their goals in storytelling just do not match.
Yeah, like,
ours.
The rhetoric does not always match.
And, like, the details that I think matter, they will not include. And then they'll be like, now let me name all his sheep. And it's just like,
right. Totally.
Why does that matter? What's the thing? And they're just like, no, the important thing is that wisdom was present. Don't worry about it.
In the Book of Enoch, which is an apocryphal book that we read for the last episode, it restarts. Like, the story restarts, like, 10 times over the course of the book.
Yeah.
And, like, from our perspective, it's like, okay, well, you say what happened first, then say what happened after that, and then after that, something else happened. Yeah, so, say that third.
I gotta tell you something. There's no time to set it in time or space.
Yeah.
In this chapter 9, that is, God has long ago approved what you do.
Yeah, that's the one where it says, like, once you have this realization, eat your food with gladness, drink your wine with a joyful heart, be clothed in white, always anoint your head with oil, enjoy life with your wife, and...
Oh, yeah, enjoy life with your wife who loves you, or whom you love.
Which is really sweet.
Yeah, which is, like, also in direct contrast to that thing from last chapter.
No, you could do... That's kind of, like, I feel like the story of the Bible is, like, various people, like, trying, you know? Uh-huh. But, like... having a really hard time struggling against their ideas. And, like, clearly here he's trying to be, like, partner with a woman who loves you. But it's so hard for him to let go of this misogyny that he's like, but no woman is wise. And it's just like, you're trying. Just,
yeah, you're trying. You're trying.
You have not yet achieved escape velocity from your bad ideas.
Again, shades of the symposium where you can love a woman in a certain kind of way, but you can't love a woman because they can't truly understand what love is.
Right. Totally, yeah.
I mean, how could they? Chapter 10, I wrote down, whoever digs a pit may fall into it.
That's great.
Whoever breaks through a wall may be bitten by a snake.
Yeah. I mean, look, everybody knows that snake wall entanglement is a huge problem area in America.
You just got to be safe, you know?
Hibernaculums are actually often to be found in stonemasonry.
You know about snakes hibernating?
Yeah. Hibernaculum is actually the word for where snakes go to mate and...
But you didn't pluralize it there in the Latin. You used the English.
Hibernaculae.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I don't know Latin.
Thank
you. Guys, about my like one thing I feel really ashamed about, which is that I don't know Latin. And I feel like I should. I honestly like...
If you go through life and that's the one thing you're ashamed about.
No, you know what? Like, I totally believe that about you because like...
I should know Latin.
You are the sort of person who thinks that you should know Latin, yeah.
Just given sort of like my areas of interest and the things that I talk about, it would be helpful to me to know Latin.
You're the sort of person who identifies with, like, the British royals.
Let's not go that
and
far.
And you believe that...
They have all their German. Bunch of German interlopers.
Okay.
I still owe a debt of loyalty to the Stuarts.
Okay, so Mallory...
Finally, your true colors come through.
Mallory is a Stuart loyalist and believes that... I mean, like, how are you going to be loyal to the Stuarts if you don't know Latin?
Right, like, it's helpful. It's helpful to know that.
You don't even know what the phrase is on their family crest.
Right.
It's probably something stupid, like,
You probably know some Latin phrase that you can supply, don't you?
What? To, like,
don't you?
I know some Latin phrases, but none are coming to mind because you're yelling at me.
Well, banish anxiety from your heart.
Gaudiamus igitur. Which, by the way, is the only Latin expression that's ever been translated into a doo-wop song. And I will play it for you after this episode is over.
Great. I can't wait.
I also have completely lost Ecclesiastes. It's just gone. I gotta go to the table of contents. Continue, please. Don't banish
anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body. For youth and vigor are meaningless.
Yeah.
He's got it there.
Also spoken like an old man.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, I mean, okay. Have we even used the word nihilism yet?
Yes, we have, but only, I think, in a Big Lebowski reference.
Oh, that was in a previous episode, though.
Yes.
No, I mean, like, this episode.
Oh, this episode? No.
Because this is basically, like, nihilism, right? Where it's like, nothing matters, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. That means that you get to define...
Well, it's very much not you get to define. Like, this book would not say, like, figure out your truth, follow your bliss.
That's true.
Like, this book is very clear on God has figured out what's right.
This is not,
do that.
This is not Aleister Crowley.
Nihilism, though, as a philosophy, kind of states, I mean, not that I'm, like, super.
This is where I don't know anything about like the actual well academic definition or prominent writings in the field of nihilism.
I could Google it right now.
Well, we could all Google.
I mean, nihilism.
But my phone's in my hand.
Like the basis of nihilism is that like nothing matters, but that's not necessarily a bad thing because you get to define meaning for yourself.
Mm. Yeah. Whereas I feel like this is saying nothing matters, and that's horrible, and I hate it, and I really wish things were different, and I'm clinging to God and to wisdom as the only port in a storm.
But at the same time, I think there's like a positive aspect to it. Not that you
definitely.
Not that you get to define meaning for yourself, like nihilism mm-hmm. might say, but like, you know, like youth and vigor are meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
or depending on your translation, fleeting.
Fleeting,
which is a slightly or less vanity. Nihilist translation, yeah. Right? Like, again, because the word is more like breath or mist. It's not like, yeah, like it's not necessary. Like it says a lot about sort of modern culture that we would see a word that means like transient, doesn't last forever,
and meaningless.
Be like, meaningless. It's garbage if it doesn't last forever and ever. And I think it kind of, depending on your translation, it can be more like those things are sort of illusions.
Yeah, but so that's like a positive thing because, yeah. You know, you spend most of your life not young
mm-hmm.
if everything yeah. goes according to plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it is kind of nice to think like, oh, that's fleeting.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you have that. It doesn't matter if you don't have it, though.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need to be worried about getting old because youth doesn't actually.
Yeah. No, and there's so much shit that I'm so just like, I can focus on it to the exclusion of remembering like nothing matters.
Oh, yeah.
Not in a dismissive sense of like nothing matters, so do whatever. But like in the sense of like, no, but like really this doesn't matter.
But like chill out.
And I'm just like, no, this matters so much and I have to get my way.
Chapter 12. So this is...
I just want to point out in chapter 11, we got that great expression, cast your bread upon the waters.
Yeah, okay,
which I don't know
mean?
What that means, but I like it a lot.
I agree.
I just like the idea of like someone very like in a melancholy way feeding ducks.
I agree.
Totally.
Duck feeding is the first thing that comes to mind.
This guy's just like, man, nothing matters. I'm going to go down to the lake and feed the
I'm
ducks.
Just going to feed the ducks.
It's like in times of trouble. Know that those ducks are always there if you've got tasty bread.
Yep.
It actually doesn't have to be that tasty. They'll eat it stale. They don't
That's
care.
True. They will.
Yeah. No, and there's just moments where he like pings back and forth between like, I've tried everything and nothing makes me happy. And then he's like, think of all the little things that can make you happy. Like light is sweet and it pleases mm-hmm. the eye to see the sun, which by the way, don't look directly at the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad advice, but yeah,
do
just
it.
Like that kind
listeners,
of.
Listeners,
but everything
do
we,
it.
Everything we see is by the grace of the sun's light.
There we are. But yeah, just like a little moment of like, light's nice, you know? It's nice that we have light and don't like live in a dark pit. And it's like, yeah, it is. It
yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of stuff. It's very like, I guess I've been surprised in doing this podcast about how like multivalent a lot of the Bible is.
Yeah.
Where it'll like contradict itself. I mean, sometimes it contradicts itself in a way that's like shitty,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it contradicts itself in a way that actually is like extremely meaningful. That mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, life is paradoxical sometimes.
Yeah.
And like things can be meaningless and that sucks, but it's also okay. That yeah. means like we're going to be fine because it doesn't matter if you fuck up, everything's meaningless.
No, and it's just like, again, like it's consistently a story of people like learning to be generous who don't want to be generous and learning to find peace when they want to fucking smite all their enemies
mm-hmm.
and learning to try to like not hurt women when like as a society they're like women don't matter that much and like it's a book about struggle. So that's like that to me explains why you see so many like inconsistencies and moments of like, hey, war's bad. And then in another minute, it's like, and if I see anyone from the country of Abimelech, God will let me dash their brains out. And it's just like, try again.
Yeah.
Try again.
We're going to keep trying again for about 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm. But it does really crack me up that he's just like, so banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body. And it's just like, be happy, young man. It's like, I am not happy now that I've read this book.
Yeah, now that I know that like everything is meaningless.
I like maybe have like this small like existential like contentment in this like ability to do my work. But like, I'm not feeling good after reading this. I'm not like, time to enjoy my youth. Like I'm almost 30 and I'm reading this. I'm like, oh man.
But isn't the structure of the book like it's playing out the journey of the acquisition of wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
Like first you don't know and you acquire and then you give it all up and then eventually you're happy and then you die, which happens in chapter 12.
Which there is also this sort of like mirror in recovery literature. There's this line that pops up often when it comes to dealing with like addiction is self-knowledge avails us nothing. And I feel like that's...
Whoa.
Right?
Whoa.
What does that mean?
Well, this is something that I found really true in my own life. Like, and it kind of talks about that in some of the literature of like this idea that like if you have like a real drinking problem
mm-hmm.
or just something in your life that you don't have control over, it's so easy to cover up a bad motive with a good one and fool yourself into thinking, this time it's going to be different because I know better. And this idea that there is as good as self-knowledge is and as good as wisdom is, there are limitations. And so this book is all about like, wisdom is good, but it's not everything. And it's not God, and it can't be your God, and it won't change the fact that you're going to die. And when it comes to stuff like addiction, you can think, God, this time, this consequence was really bad. And I don't want these things to keep happening. And my family's really worried, and my friends are upset, and I'm losing relationships, and I might lose my job. I really know better this time. And I've learned a lot about the nature of addiction and why people do the things they do. And so this time I'm just going to like reason my way out of it. And then you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, what did I do?
Yeah.
In chapter 7, the author says, it is good that you should take hold of the one, meaning foolishness, without letting go of the other, meaning wisdom.
Get it? You're not so smart. I feel like that's what this book is telling
me. Yeah, you could like, it could be subtitled. Ecclesiastes, also known as, you're not so smart.
Mallory, you're an idiot.
All right, so now we arrive at chapter 12, the final chapter.
Chapter 12 is a rather heartbreaking extended metaphor about death,
mm-hmm.
Expressed in the terms of the daily routines of a town sort of being interrupted. In the day when the guards of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the women who grind cease working because they are few and those who look through the windows see dimly. When the doors on the street are shut, then the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low, etc. Before the silver cord is snapped, and the golden bowl is broken, and the pitcher is broken at the fountain, and the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the breath returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the teacher, all is vanity.
This would be such a good metal album.
Totally.
Like, the birds, sure, that's a great song, but, like, I say Ecclesiastes makes a really good heavy metal album. Before the golden bowl is broken at the cistern! Like, right? Like, it's there.
Is that where Henry James got the golden bowl that's broken?
Probably.
Probably. Yeah. You have to ask him.
But, yeah, that's, like, an amazing, devastating image.
It is.
And it ends with that same verse that we began with, which... I guess in your Bible is vanity, but in mine is meaningless. Meaningless. Yeah. You mean it's all been meaningless. Magnetic field? Hmm?
Hmm? Nope.
69 love songs?
Yes. Huh? Yeah.
Nope. I'm getting a strong no over here.
But yeah, then it kind of just ends with like, and that's who the teacher was.
So that's the book of Ecclesiastes. Mallory, you mentioned at the top of the show that Abraham Lincoln had quoted it.
He sure did.
And I believe you had some other esoteric knowledge.
It's not esoteric because it's all like readily available if you Google like Ecclesiastes.
We're busy people, and I'm sure our listeners are too.
Thomas Wolfe, I think, called it something like the most moral piece of writing I've ever read.
Is that a slam?
No. Oh, okay. I think he was very, like, he considered it to be like, deeply engaged with reality.
And Thomas Wolfe is not Tom Wolfe.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's why I thought it was a slam.
No, sorry. Yeah, two different guys.
English major knowledge.
it influenced a book by Tolstoy that I think he called Confessions, but I haven't read it, so I couldn't tell you what it's about. Aside from, I have some guesses. I imagine wind is in there, and
mm-hmm. I bet dust is in there.
Vanity,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Broken bowls, and it's certainly like an influential book. Like, it influenced a lot of like 70s heavy folk songs. Like, Kansas really got in with that. Like, there's that real.
Our most consequential music genre.
Mm-hmm. One of my personal favorites, certainly.
So, as I said earlier, when I invited you on the podcast and asked if you had a specific book that you mm-hmm. would like to be the guest for, you immediately said Ecclesiastes.
Yep.
So what was going through your mind then?
I think this is just a book I've always returned to, like that I have read it when it has troubled me deeply and I have felt afraid of it. It's made me really uncomfortable. I've found it really comforting. I have wanted to push it away. I felt like, oh, finally someone gets me. Like I have never read it and not felt deeply stirred. And there's a lot of books in the Bible that don't make me feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a book that makes me feel very known by like at least one person who is writing this like massive conglomeration of texts. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that very, very much. And I like the idea that if nothing else, when they were compiling the Bible, they were like, are we keeping this?
Yeah, they definitely, and they had a fight about it.
They did. And like, I think was Martin Luther like really wanted it out of there.
Martin Luther seemed to dislike
much of the Old
Testament.
He wanted a lot of shit out of there.
Yeah. He was a guy who did some stuff. Let's leave it at that. But yeah, like, yeah. And at various times people have tried to really like,
sorry to all you Luthhounds out there.
Luthhounds. You know, at various times, like depending on sort of like the room temperature of Christian circles. I can't speak to how Jewish communities have interpreted
Nor can
it
I.
variously.
Sorry. No, it's okay.
There's been this real sense of like, we have to reject this book. It can't be canonical. It must be a mistake that it's in here. Or like those bits in the NIV, like, well, that's about diversifying your portfolio. Yeah. Like he doesn't really mean the things you think he means. Like, don't worry. Let's resolve this like unresolved note.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that's like a big theme in my Bible's notes is like, let's just resolve this when, mm-hmm. and that's like how I was raised.
Totally.
You know, like this is the lesson that you should take from this when actually what I'm learning through reading the Bible for this podcast is like mm-hmm. so much of it is definitely meant to be unresolved. Like
yeah.
it's very much meant to be self-contradictory and ambivalent mm-hmm. and multivalent.
Yeah. I mean, it's a book. It's a series of books written over like a period of like thousands of years.
Yeah.
About people's like ever-changing understanding of what God is and what God wants from us and what we should be like together. I don't know how you could find a book that was like consistent and
right.
coherent and docile.
Right.
Like,
and yet, like, American Christianity is based on the idea mm-hmm. that, like, yeah, this says one thing
mm-hmm.
and it's totally consistent and literally true.
Yeah, no, and I think that's why I'm so glad that book's still in there because, like, you can try really hard to make this about diversifying your stock options or whatever, but, like, that's clearly a book that's meant to unsettle you.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it does unsettle people, and I hope it always does.
Yeah.
And, I think that's why I like. Also, I just like the word Ecclesiastes, right? Like, that's just a cool word.
High quality word.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of already there, but should we rate this book?
Yes.
So, Lauren, what did you think of this week's book?
I'm going to give it 7 out of 8 dogs in heaven.
Okay.
Which may exist according to this book.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we've talked so much about the really interesting philosophical implications. I've already talked about how I think this like deepens my idea of what Christianity can be mm-hmm. instead of like the very flat moralistic version that I was raised with.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to dock it 1 point for the misogyny, but 7 out of 8 is still a great score.
It still is.
How would you rate this book, Nico?
I would give it 19 out of 20.
Whoa.
Fish is caught in a cruel net.
Nice.
For basically all the same reasons that you said. I thought in terms of wisdom literature, high quality, had an excellent flow in terms of the ideas, the way that they progressed through the book.
Mm-hmm.
The writing was top notch, even in translation, still had a lot of rhetorical punch.
And
do
check out the King James Version when you get a chance. It's extremely good.
We will.
We will.
This is a book that lends itself really well to some like old-timey,
poetic, yeah.
like, totally.
I will, again, dock at 1 point for some unwise misogyny. But otherwise, top-quality book, definitely worth a reread.
Gonna oh, nice and short, too.
Nice and short.
Dude, because, like, the Book of Enoch was a jillion pages long, and this week we're like, oh, Okay. Yeah, got it.
Yeah. Nothing matters. Let's move on.
Mallory, how would you rate this book?
I already rated it, if you'll recall, with 2 fistfuls of dust, which is already streaming away through your fingers.
Streaming away through your fingers.
Yeah, 2 fistfuls of dust.
2 out of 2.
Yeah, because you've only got 2 hands.
That's true. I mean, most people do.
At most, you have 2 hands.
So that's as many fistfuls of dust as one could have.
Which is the same as no fistfuls of dust at all.
Oh, no.
Did I just blow your mind?
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go for that.
All right.
Well, I'm not going to dock any points for misogyny because I feel like he's trying. You know, he's trying his best.
And like, if you're only doing out of two, like it's not going to dock 50%.
No, I'm not going to lose a full hand of dust.
Absolutely not.
Just
like a couple grains. Yeah. Maybe.
They've already scattered away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mallory, where can people find you?
They can find me no longer at The Toast, but currently at Slate. I write there as Dear Prudence. I give advice to people who are doing bad things. And I guess on Twitter, at Mal Ellis, but can't imagine that the Venn diagram of someone who's listening to this podcast but doesn't follow me on Twitter has like a big overlap.
I think you might be surprised.
Fair enough. All right. Like, come find me on Twitter. Mostly I yell about
pro wrestling, I assume.
People I think should be lesbians. By which I mean like characters.
By which she means William Shatner.
By which I mean characters that I think should be interpreted as lesbians. I'm not trying to turn people into lesbians by arguing about it, but like, yeah.
If you were, that'd be cool too.
Captain Kirk, specifically Captain Kirk as portrayed by William Shatner, is a lesbian. And not just a lesbian, but like a sleek Persian cat of a lesbian.
The best kind.
The best kind. Who else? Ryan Atwood from The OC is a lesbian.
I never watched The OC.
And I think that Nick Jonas, I know he's trying really hard to court like his gay male fan base in such a way that everyone's kind of annoyed with him about, but he's actually, I think, a lesbian.
Mm. That all makes sense.
That song, Jealous, that's the most lesbian song anyone's ever written in all time.
I don't know anything you're talking about, but I believe you 100%.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Those are certainly opinions.
They sure are. And you can find all of these and more
at twitter.com/Mal Ellis.
Twitter.com, yeah.
And you're working on a new book.
I am, yes. Oh, actually, including, this is relevant to your podcast. So it's a collection of short stories. I sold it back in January and it's coming out in 2017. It's a collection of short stories kind of along the lines of like Shirley Jackson, Flannery O'Connor, Angela Carter. Creepy kind of retellings of things.
So you're talking about fiction here.
Fiction. I'm going for fiction now.
We're reading the Bible? That isn't relevant.
Hey-o. And one of the stories is a like upsetting retelling of the Book of Ruth.
Oh, awesome.
Because I was thinking about it. It's a great book. And that like kind of famous monologue, that devotion of that expression of devotion and loyalty when she says, you know, entreat me not to leave you. Whither thou goest, I will go. As where your people are, there will be my people. Where you are buried, I will be buried. Your God will be my God. And I thought, how horrifying would that be to hear from someone you hated and were afraid of and you could not separate yourself from? So creepy lesbian stalking.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Coming up.
That's great.
It's not going to be a... It's going to be a creepy book.
We'll re-record our Ruth episode.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We'll do a re-Ruth special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill.
Nobody asked, but thank you.
Ouch!
Our podcast is on Twitter at Sun School Drop and on Facebook. Nico isn't on Twitter.
Not that anyone asked.
And no one asked. But he does do all our music and sound engineering, so thanks, baby.
Hey, no problem. You can find our website at sundayschooldropouts.lol.
You can send us an email, contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. You can tell us your favorite Kansas song, if you want.
Yeah, lay it on us.
We'll force Mallory to read them.
Yes, we will.
I would say not by Kansas, but up there is Dance With Me by Orlon. I don't know how you say it.
I definitely don't know.
I'm going to play it for you, Snoozes.
Great.
Great.
Let's see what else. Oh, thank you to Elise Carlton for our logo.
Absolutely.
And we would super, 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 super appreciate it if you would rate us on iTunes.
Stand behind the courage of your convictions, Lauren. We would like you to review us on iTunes.
Dear listeners, please review us on iTunes. It's very helpful to us.
Signed, L. Fuck you, O'Neill.
That's my name.
I would like to apologize for trying to tell a woman how to speak.
How dare you?
It was wrong of me to criticize your tone of voice.
How dare you?
As we all know,
tone policing is a tool of the patriarchy.
Okay.
It's just an hour of giggling and vocal fry.
You know, as long as we can all agree that everything I do is wrong, I think we're okay.
Everything we do is wrong, and that'll bring us to the end of today's episode of Sunday School Dropouts. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Nico.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Mallory.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.